Welcome to In-Depth, an in-depth look at the interesting, educational, and timely topics affecting you right here in Marion County and beyond. The one to count on for today's local news coverage is KNIA KRLS. And now with today's In-Depth, here is Dr. Bob Leonard.
The Academy Award-winning movie, The King's Speech, brought stuttering to the attention of the world. What is stuttering, and why does it happen, and how do people overcome it? Let's go in depth with Tara Leidy and Kayla Jiskut, speech therapists at Pella Regional Health Center. What's stuttering?
Stuttering is a communication disorder where there's some blocks in the sounds coming out. They're either usually in the form of repetition. They'll repeat the first sound, la, la, like that, or they'll prolong a first sound and hold it out, like. It can be interjections, and those things are all characterized as stuttering.
Now, is stuttering common?
It's more common in kids ages 2 to 5. Approximately about 5% of those kids go through some period in their life where they are disfluent. In the adult population, about 1% is actually the incidence, prevalence.
Yeah, and it ends up being about 3 million Americans.
And did you say disfluent?
Disfluent, yeah. It's another way to say stutters. Like Tara said, stuttering is kind of that disruption of that smooth, easy speech. And so instead of fluent, you know, we see that, say those things would be disfluent. So disfluency is.
Are they one and the same or slightly different?
They're the same.
One and the same. Is one more polite to say? Is stuttering an old term? Or is it something that we're trying to shift to disfluent? Is that better or worse?
I think disfluent is probably more of a professional term. Yeah, probably most lay people wouldn't really know the term disfluent, I think.
I would agree.
But I don't think it's rude to say someone stutters.
Now, it seems that there are fewer people stuttering now than when I was growing up. Is that true, or is there just are there things that people can do to make it less noticeable?
There are techniques and devices out there that can be used to help the stuttering be less severe. So that's probably why it seems like it's not as noticeable. But I don't think the actual numbers has decreased.
What causes it? Is it something that has to do with the way the brain works, with genetics? Is it some other kind of a condition?
Tricky question. Actually, the precise mechanisms aren't fully understood. There are factors that play into things that can contribute to stuttering, but typically stuttering is broken into two different types. One is developmental, and the other is neurogenic. In developmental stuttering, this typically occurs in children. A lot of times it occurs while they're still learning speech and language, and basically, kind of what happens is the children's speech and language skills are growing much faster than their little mouths can keep up with. So sometimes we have that disfluent speech in the kids. Secondly, the neurogenic stuttering typically results after some sort of brain injury. So sometimes you might see neurogenic stuttering in folks who've had a stroke or some sort of head trauma.
But not necessarily so.
No, not necessarily so. Some of the factors that can contribute to both developmental and neurogenic are, you know, genetics. Do you have a family history of disfluency in the family? Child development, so again, you know, what are their speech and language skills like? Are they kind of going through a phase where they're learning lots of new language? And again, their little mouths can't keep up. You know, family dynamics also play a role as well.
More in depth. After this. I continued my conversation about stuttering with speech therapist Tara Leidy and Kayla Jiskut. Now, when I was growing up, I had an uncle who's now passed away who stuttered a lot and really wasn't any big deal. It was just my Uncle Ralph, but he stuttered a lot, more in stressful situations, almost like he couldn't get out of it. And for some reason, it seemed to me that there might be some kind of social factors at play that would make him stutter. Can that happen?
Stress doesn't cause someone to become a person who stutters. Emotional factors don't cause that. Decreased intelligence doesn't cause stuttering, but if you are a person who stutters and you're in a stressful situation, the stuttering does become more severe. So there is a reaction to it that way. There's a point where the stuttering does become kind of an emotional, there's emotional components to it that will affect the severity.
And so it just, as you get more nervous, you stutter more. As you stutter more, you get more nervous,
right.
And it just continues.
Vicious circle, exactly, yeah.
And there are techniques that I bet that you that pull people out of that now, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
What might those be?
There's so many. If you're dealing with a young child, it partly depends on how aware the child is of the stuttering. A lot of times they can be quite disfluent, but they don't have an awareness of that, which is a good thing. So you don't really want to bring attention to that right away. And you just mostly are going to model some nice, slow, relaxed speech for the children. Remember Mr. Rogers?
Mm-hmm.
That's the ideal kind of speech to model for someone who stutters and doesn't have that awareness yet. Give them the pause time, and then they don't have that time pressure on them or feel that time pressure. When you're older and you're aware of the disfluencies, a lot of times we try and make them stop the speech before it actually comes out of the mouth, and then make some changes before they're even speaking that sound. So it's an awareness of what you feel like before you're going to stutter and making the changes before then. But there's lots of different techniques depending on the age and the severity.
Okay, and so you work individually with people and identify what the possible solutions might be.
Right.
Okay, and so I presume it's best to get a kid when they're young and just starting it.
Right.
But if you're a parent, how do you know what's sort of normal developmental and then what isn't and when they need help? How do you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. Like I said before, most children will go through a period in their lives where they experience some disfluency, and a lot of that is just due to language growth. You know, and it's a normally disfluent child might use some fillers. They might use the ums and the ers and the uhs. But what we get more concerned about is when repetitions occur in words, and usually those repetitions occur more than twice. So, for example, Tara said the word like. She said like. That would be something that would be more concerning. Also, we look at the child's response to the stutters. Are they having tension? Are they aware of it? Do they get frustrated? And that's really when we get concerned and want to maybe look at providing intervention.
Yeah, when you start to see associated behaviors with it, they'll turn away, they'll close their eyes, they'll turn their head away, they'll stop, they'll try to avoid talking. That's a sure sign that they need to try and get some intervention and assessment. I think as a general rule, if it's 3 to 6 months and it hasn't gone away, that's a good time to at least seek an evaluation. Because normally developing, you're going to have, they'll have it for a while and then it goes away. And then they might have it for a little while and it goes away. But if it stays for 3 to 6 months, you probably should have an assessment done. It's a general rule.
More in depth after this. I continued my conversation about stuttering with speech therapist Tara Leidy and Kayla Jiskut. Has there been research on what the brain does in stutterers versus non-stutterers? I mean, you know, some kind of a CAT scan or something. Do different parts of the brain fire?
Yeah, there's been so much research. And, you know, the short answer is they really, really don't know exactly what happens. They do know that in some people, the brain processes speech and language different in people who stutter than in people who don't. But beyond that, again, it's a bunch of different things coming together. You could have two brains that look the same, and one stutters and one doesn't, because they also, this person also has a lot of pressure from their family to be a high achiever, or they also have an uncle who stutters, or, you know, it's a combination of factors.
Now, I remember as a kid, spending a lot of time with my uncle, I started mimicking his speech patterns. Was that just sort of the normal mimicking of people's speech patterns, or is there some kind of association there, or am I just making stuff up?
Well, you can't, that's one of the myths of stuttering. You can't catch stuttering from somebody. If you're around somebody who stutters and you mimic them, you can't catch stuttering, become a stutterer.
That doesn't happen.
No, you can't catch stuttering from somebody.
That's a myth?
That's one of the myths. And people think, like, if they play around like that and they pretend to stutter for a certain amount of time, they'll become a stutterer, and that's just a myth.
Are there other myths with stuttering?
It's not helpful to tell a person to just take a deep breath and relax, which is, I think, a tendency a lot of times. That actually makes the stuttering worse, because you draw attention to it, and then they get that vicious cycle going.
So that's sort of patronizing, too.
Yeah, yes, yep. So that's a myth. It's a myth that people who stutter are less intelligent or less emotionally sound. And so those are myths that go along with stuttering sometimes, too.
What else should we know about stuttering that we don't know?
They're trying, like I said, the research on this is just, they're hitting it hard, and it's been going on for years, and they're trying to come up with new devices. They have some things out now where though you can wear an implant in your ear, and it gives you delayed feedback of what you say, and that kind of tricks the brain sometimes. And so someone who has a severe stutterer will hear what he says after he says it, and then their speech comes out fluent. So they're just really trying all kinds of different ways to help with intervention and help people have a more normal functional life, because it can be very debilitating depending on the severity.
Mm-hmm. Researchers are also exploring new ways to improve early identification, because like we talked about before, the sooner that intervention can be provided, you know, the better the outcome. So they're looking for possible genes that even might be a contributing factor to, you know, some of the hereditary mm-hmm. factors about stuttering.
Say 60% of people who stutter have a family member who stutters. So there is a genetic mm-hmm. component.
And overall, generally males, the percentage of males, the ratio of males to females is 4 to 1. So
mm-hmm. really?
Mm-hmm. It's higher incidence in males.
Mm-hmm. Any differences across various ethnic groups?
I don't know. I've never actually come across any factors about that.
Yeah, I haven't either. Not that I've heard of, not that I'm aware of either.
But we guys do it more.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just possible that people are different? We're different in all kinds of ways. We have different heights, weights. We look different phenotypes. Is it possible that stuttering is just one expression of the normal range of human variation, and we just get sort of really picky about people that are sort of on the edges of different kinds of behavior, or how we look, how we act, our weight, our height? Is that possible with stuttering, that it's just a speech pattern?
Mm-hmm. I think so to a degree. But I think when that communication pattern interferes with your daily life, then it's an issue. I mean, then it's beyond the norm or the range of normal. I mean, I think everybody has disfluencies during the day. Everybody has hesitancies and repetitions and fillers, but they don't interfere with your job or your daily life or anything you do. And I think if it gets to the point where it does, then it's, you know, then it's beyond that. Well, that's just a variation of their personality.
Okay, so when it gets in the way of you being successful in whatever you're trying to do, that's mm-hmm. that's what you, or you might want to seek some kind of mm-hmm. help. And the younger, the better.
Yes.
And so do you work predominantly with kids?
Yeah, a majority of the persons who stutter that we work with are children.
And you two aren't old enough to have fully grown patients that started out with you as kids and now are an adult, so you really can't assess how they've grown. but I'm sure you've read studies about how people, and you speak with adult people who grew up stuttering, and how's the success rate in treatment?
You know, naturally, out of those, 5% of those kids that do have disfluencies during that, 2 to 5 age period, 3/4 of them naturally outgrow it on their own. And it's just that remaining 1/4. And I would say, with intervention, they are quite successful. Mm-hmm. They learn how to use those strategies and how to apply them to their everyday life to, not necessarily, not only control the stuttering, but just, being just able to live with it.
You can't cure it. Control, I think, is a good word to say. You can definitely help them gain control over the disfluency so that they can go about their day. I had 2 professors in grad school that both stuttered, and they were able to teach at a college level and were very successful with it.
I'm sure there's lots of famous stutterers out there.
There are, yes.
Mm-hmm. Do you know a couple of them?
Well, I know there was just a movie made about one of them, King George VI, mm-hmm. but I'm sure there's many more.
Mm-hmm. James Earl Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's partly why with him it's kind of interesting, because he has that deep, deep, very distinct voice, and that's a strategy for him to not stutter when he changes the quality and the timbre of his voice. So, and Mel Tillis,
mm-hmm. I knew that.
And he doesn't stutter when he sings, because it's using a different part of your brain to produce that singing rather than talking. So.
Any other ones?
Oh, yeah, I think John Stossel, who's a news reporter. Mm-hmm. He was also a person who stutters. Oh, gosh, there's several, actually.
Marilyn Monroe.
I think Carly Simon, another singer.
Carly Simon, Winston Churchill. Mm-hmm. Lots of successful people.
Yeah, I think, actually, Nicole Kidman, I read, too.
Oh, really?
A person who stutters, which I wasn't aware of. And she's in, tons of movies and does just a marvelous job.
All right, so any advice to parents? Any last words of wisdom to parents with kids that think there might be an issue?
I'd say just to be aware of your child's speech, and if you have concerns, contact a professional who can at least do an assessment and give you some suggestions on whether it's something that needs to be addressed or not. If you're talking with someone who stutters, I think the best advice is just to respond naturally. Look at them like you are listening to what they're saying rather than how they're saying. Pause in between your turn and their turn, just to decrease the rushing. I mean, everybody seems to rush when they're talking so much, so just modeling good communication is helpful for them.
Thanks to Tara Leidy and Kayla Jiskut for contributing to the program.
For KNIA KRLS News, this is Dr. Bob Leonard bringing you today's news and information in depth from our little corner of the universe.
In Depth is available for podcast in the radio audio media player on KNIAKRLS.com. You'll find additional information, pictures, and more, or subscribe to the In Depth podcast and never miss an episode. If you have local topics you'd like to hear on In Depth, send an email to Bob Leonard at KNIAKRLS.com. The one to count on for today's news and local information is KNIAKRLS and KNIAKRLS.com.